It is a crime so vicious.
His nose was cut off. His left eye was cut in half.
This was a brutal, brutal murder.
It shocks the entire nation.
The crime gleaned as much attention.
I feel like justice has been served today.
As the O.J. Simpson trial.
It is never forgotten.
Certain murders become entrenched in urban legend.
And Lizzie Borden, well, that's one of them.
But did history condemn the wrong person?
She was doomed to loneliness.
Is Lizzie Borden really one of America's most deadly women?
If Lizzie didn't do it, who did?
In the 1890s, in Fall River, Massachusetts.
Who can tell me what this is?
Billy.
Crucifix.
Yes. And why do we call it that?
Sunday mornings are a time for Lizzie Borden to spread the faith.
Because Jesus was crucified on the cross.
Lizzie worked as a Sunday school teacher at the Central Congregational Church, which socially was certainly the most affluent, or one of the two most affluent churches in the city.
A church befitting its affluent congregation, including the Borden family.
The Borden family was much esteemed in Fall River, and certainly the family was steeped in local history.
You must be very proud of her.
So she's doing well?
Lizzie's father, Andrew Borden, came from a very wealthy family, but he came from the poorer branch.
But Andrew still provides a good life for 32-year-old Lizzie and her sister Emma, who's 10 years older. The two women are spinsters, still living at home.
Emma's gonna read you a story.
How are we all faring today?
Very well, thank you.
Lizzie and Emma share a bond closer than most sisters.
Once upon a time.
Lizzie's mother died when she was only two, and her older sister, Emma, took over a surrogate mother role.
He was so special that there were three...
But all is not well in the family.
Lizzie's father remarried when she was only four or five. Stepmother Abby really tried to be a good mother figure to her.
There have been tensions since childhood.
Lizzie, look what I've got. Somebody put them in your hair?
Emma does my hair.
Lizzie really never got close with her stepmother, Abby.
Lizzie sees Emma as her mother figure.
Do you want some help?
No, thank you.
Emma promised her mother on her mother's deathbed that she would watch over baby Lizzie. And Emma took that charge very seriously.
Very pretty.
Some people think of Abby as the evil stepmother, but there's no indication that was true.
As the years pass, the situation doesn't improve.
I have an apple pie for dinner.
I'm afraid Emma and I have other plans. Isn't that right, Emma?
Yes, that's right.
I think with Abby, she tried hard as hell to get them kids to love her.
But your father would want us all to be together.
Do not speak for my father. You are not my mother.
She had the devoted affection of her husband. That's clear. Did she have it with the kids? I don't believe that was the case at all.
Father Andrew spends less time worrying about family dynamics and more time making money.
He made his money in the furniture business and in the undertaking business. He invested in textile mill stock, in real estate, in banking stock.
The rich branch of the Borden family earned fortunes from cotton. But Andrew isn't so lucky.
He had no inherited wealth, so certainly he had earned every cent he had. However, his fortune was meager by the standards of many of the wealthy Bordens in 19th century Fall River.
In 1890, Fall River is a boom town, the center of the cotton trade. But it's a town divided. While Andrew's tycoon cousins live high on the hill, his family live down by the river among the working class.
So I start a new job on Monday.
I'm glad to hear you have a new job at last.
Andrew is known to be a shrewd businessman.
Well, perhaps you'll be able to pay your rent on time in future.
Oh, please be reasonable, Mr. Borden. I'm only asking for one more week.
There was a lot about Andrew that was admirable. He was determined to build up wealth for his family. But with that came some unscrupulousness.
I have been more than reasonable with you.
Lizzie is never far away, listening and learning.
You have until Friday, and that is final.
So I have a family to support.
And for their sake, I hope you come up with the money.
Good day to you, sir.
Good day.
I think that Lizzie was the son he never had.
Another charity.
Of course not, Father.
In that regard, I think that he probably taught her the business.
You can't let people take advantage of you.
I think that she was very close to her father.
Let's take a breath of fresh air.
But one financial decision threatens to destroy the bond between father and daughter.
Andrew, Sarah's here.
When Abby's half-sister, Sarah Whitehead, faces eviction.
Shh. Everything's going to be all right. Andrew has something to tell you.
Sarah, your house is yours forever.
Andrew comes to the rescue.
Andrew purchased a house for Abby's half-sister.
So now Sarah had a place of her own. She was a woman of property.
His daughters were not happy about it.
We don't understand why you would purchase property for someone who isn't even family.
She had nowhere else to go, and she is family.
She's our stepmother's half-sister.
They thought stepmom's half-sister got something they should have had.
What you did for her people, you ought to do for your own children.
Emma shares her sister's resentment.
Eventually, he relented. He sold his father's home that he had inherited for $1 to the two girls.
However, you must be nicer to Abby in future.
But Andrew's gift isn't enough to heal the rift.
Go and apologize.
Lizzie shows her contempt for that move that her dad made in buying that property by shunning Abby's family in the street.
Ugh, look who it is.
The street is everything. That's where you see everybody.
Hello, Lizzie.
Hello, Lizzie.
Lizzie?
And it's easy to do what? To turn your head.
Lizzie, Lizzie, where are your manners?
Horrible old woman.
And that's what Lizzie did.
There was a countdown of resentments going on. Things she didn't have that she thought she deserved. From her mother to a home on the hill.
Lizzie is determined to live on the hill, even if it comes at a terrible price. In the 1890s, in Fall River, Massachusetts. Lizzie Borden clashes with her stepmother, Abby.
I have an apple pie for dinner.
I'm afraid Emma and I have other plans.
Unmarried and unhappy, Lizzie longs for a better life.
There is a melancholy that surrounds her. She wanted to live in a better house. She wanted to have better friends. She wanted to go to parties.
Lizzie blamed her father for the fact that she had no marriage prospects. He had chosen to live near his business interests, whereas most of the members of the Borden family lived up on the hill looking down on the town.
Lizzie ventures up the hill on occasion to visit with wealthy cousins, but only for board games, not ballroom dances.
That was the seat of genteel society. Had she been there, she would come across men that would be suitable for her to wed. That was a source of resentment towards her father.
A mysterious illness doesn't help the mood in the house down by the river.
After breakfast, I'd like you to wash the first floor windows, inside and out.
Everybody in the house begins to claim that they're feeling nauseous and ill and start vomiting.
In the days before refrigeration, food poisoning is common.
Did the meat go bad?
We're all suffering here.
Did they eat some bad mutton?
You take as long as you need.
Or was somebody in the house poisoning them?
Abby fears the worst.
You know, Andrew is just as bad. Both up all night vomiting.
When Abby went to the family doctor, she said to the doctor they had been poisoned.
Do you think our bread could have been tampered with?
It's possible.
You'd have to wonder who she thought was poisoning the bread. Was she aware that Andrew Borden was having difficulties with one of his tenants? Or was she thinking someone else would have been responsible?
Lizzie thinks something suspicious, too. With her sister away on a trip, Lizzie turns to her close friend, Alice Russell.
What is it, Lizzie?
I fear someone is trying to harm my family.
Did Lizzie have a premonition?
Father has a lot of enemies.
Or was Lizzie just being a very clever young woman and using this friend to establish some danger to the family?
There's something else Lizzie finds worrisome. The conversation she overhears between her father and her uncle, John Morse. He's arrived without warning.
Have you come to a decision yet?
He didn't bring a suitcase. He didn't bring anything with him. And that was suspect.
There was talk that Andrew was discussing making a will. And it's possible that he had talked to John Morse about what he might do with his money.
I think I've made a decision, and not everybody's going to be happy with the way I'm splitting my assets.
It's understandable.
Lizzie was in a precarious financial situation. All of her present and future economic needs were dependent on Andrew. Any decision he made would affect the rest of her life.
The morning of August the 4th, 1892. This fateful day, will become immortalized in American criminal history.
I think the morning started as any other day would have in the Borden household.
Thank you again for your help.
Although still feeling ill, Andrew insists on going to work.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
John Morse and Andrew Borden left the house that morning, planned on coming back for the noon meal. Emma Borden, of course, was not at home.
Lizzie and the maid, Bridget Sullivan, who's nicknamed Maggie, are still not feeling 100%.
Would you like some breakfast, Lizzie?
No, I'm not feeling well.
Abby's not well either, but soldiers on with the day's chores.
Morning, Lizzie.
Morning, Mrs. Borden.
Bridget Sullivan was told by Mrs. Borden to wash the windows on the first floor.
Bridget, I'll take care of the guest rooms upstairs. Need to finish washing the windows?
Mrs. Borden then went up to the guest bedroom on the second floor, the room John Morse had slept in the night before.
So, Abby is upstairs. She's fluffing the beds. She's doing stuff that she normally does. And Lizzie is doing her own thing inside the house. Bridget is outside.
An hour later, on his business rounds, Andrew's illness gets the better of him.
So he came back home early at 10:30.
The front door was locked.
Who is it?
This was unusual. He knocked, and the maid Bridget let him in.
So sorry, Mr. Borden, it's stuck.
And apparently, Bridget had a little trouble. And she hears Lizzie giggling upstairs. She's certain of it.
I do apologize.
Don't worry about it, Bridget, thank you.
Lizzie isn't expecting her father home so early.
Thank you.
How's your neck?
I'm fine.
When Andrew Borden came home, he apparently inquired as to where Mrs. Borden was.
Where's Abby?
She received a note. She went out to help somebody who was sick.
Lizzie helps him to take his boots off so she can make him comfortable. And then she goes out to the barn. Bridget goes up to take a rest. And the rest is history.
One of America's most infamous addresses, 230 2nd Street, Fall River, the Borden home. The story starts over a century ago when the family falls ill.
We're all
suffering.
About a food poisoning or something more sinister.
I feel I have to sleep with one eye open for fear that they will try and burn our house down over us.
Lizzie Borden was worried that someone was trying to harm her family.
Stepmother Abby is frightened, too.
Do you think our bread could have been tampered with?
It's possible.
On August the 4th, 1892, the family's fears come true.
Maggie! Maggie!
Lizzie discovered the body of her father, Andrew Borden, lying dead on the couch.
Maggie!
This was a very, very bloody scene. This was a brutal, brutal murder.
His eye was split in half. His nose was nearly cut off. I mean, he had no face left, this guy.
Police arrive within minutes to a household in shock.
Miss Boyd, do you know where your mother is?
She's not my mother. She's my stepmother.
Sorry, do you know where your stepmother is?
I don't know. I think she went out visiting. Maggie, check upstairs.
Not on my own.
Come on. I'll go with you.
Lizzie gets a morphine sedative. She'll need it.
Abby's body was found on the floor of the guest room. She was found laying face down in a pool of blood. This crime was brutal. This crime was grisly.
Adding to the macabre scene, autopsies are carried out in the sitting room. The bodies are tested for toxins due to poisoning fears. But the head wounds leave little doubt of the cause of death.
Abby sustained 19 blows from a blunt, heavy instrument, like an axe. Andrew had 11 blows to his face and to the left side of his skull. Portions of bone had been driven into the brain, and there was a large amount of blood.
The evidence points to Abby being killed first, 90 minutes before husband Andrew.
Abby's blood was slightly coagulated, and her body temperature was a little cooler than that of her husband Andrew.
Where the hell would the killer go? If he kills Abby upstairs, what, does he hide in a closet?
Generally, strangers don't go into a home, kill one person, hit them 18, 19 times with an axe, wait around for an hour and a half, apparently knowing the husband's gonna come home.
I do apologize.
Don't worry about it, Bridget. Thank you.
The police start thinking maybe these aren't random killings.
Blows to the face suggest a great deal of anger, suggest a deep personal connection.
They start looking a little closer to home.
Well, there are any number of theories as to who the perpetrator of the crime could have been. Certainly many people believe that it was John Morse, the uncle.
Some find Uncle John's sudden arrival the day before the murders suspicious.
If he was a part of arranging this killing for whatever reason, and even though he didn't financially profit, it was his blood nieces that benefited from it. So maybe it was his gift.
Others suspect the hired help.
There were a lot of people who thought Bridget the maid could have been the one to commit those crimes.
Or is it older sister, Emma? She will inherit Andrew's estate and is conveniently absent.
It is possible that Emma arranged the entire thing. Emma's alibi being away, not anywhere nearby, couldn't possibly have made it back in time. There's something suspicious about her perfect alibi.
Please be reasonable, Mr. Boyd. I'm only asking for one more week.
Could it have been the disgruntled business associate?
Mr. Borden made a lot of enemies in his life. And one of those enemies certainly could have killed him and his wife.
A handful of suspects, a house full of bodies, and a mystery just starting to unfold.
People were panicked and distressed. But there was one person who was remaining very calm and collected.
A killer needs three things to commit a homicide: motive, opportunity, and means. Lizzie Borden had all of those.
August the 4th, 1892. News of the brutal murders of Andrew and Abby Borden sends shudders through the community of Fall River, Massachusetts.
It shocked the community. People were afraid. They were concerned that there was a killer on the loose.
Whoever committed the crime would have known the lay of the house and certainly would have known where to hide or disguise themselves in that house.
Everyone close to the Bordens is under suspicion.
The police looked at Uncle John, who had been in town at the time, but he was with other family members who verified where he was. He was not there.
The hired help has the opportunity. But police discover that Abby and her maid have a close relationship.
Bridget really had no motive because she had nothing to gain by their deaths at all, except unemployment.
There's the victim's eldest daughter, Emma.
They considered Emma. But her alibi was rock solid. She wasn't even in town.
And as for the disgruntled businessman theory, I have been more than
reasonable with you. There are reports of Mr. Borden arguing with a man a day or two before the murder.
You have until Friday.
But the man is never identified.
Thank you, sir.
They looked to find somebody who could have had a business disagreement, and they just could not find anyone who not only would have a motive, but who could have possibly been in that house at that time.
That leaves just one prime suspect, who 3 days after the murders is caught burning a dress.
I wouldn't let anybody see me do that, Lizzie.
I cannot for the life of me think of why anyone would burn a dress. She said she did it because the dress had some paint on it. But why burn it?
Lizzie's friend, Alice Russell, goes to the authorities. An inquest is called.
Were your relations towards her that of daughter and mother?
In some ways it was, in some ways it was not.
The inquest was held very much like a trial, and Lizzie was interrogated during that inquest without any counsel of law.
In what ways was it?
I did not call her mother.
The family rift is exposed. And there's something else. A suspicious trip to a drugstore.
I'd like to purchase 10 cents worth of prussic acid, please.
The day before the murders.
Do you have a prescription?
No.
Prussic acid is actually hydrogen cyanide, and cyanide is a deadly chemical weapon.
I'm sorry, I can't give it to you.
It was used in World War II in the gas chambers of Europe.
Well, I only need it to clean my sealskin cape.
I understand, but it's a dangerous substance.
Why did she really want that poison? Did that suddenly make her realize that her only hope was a much more violent means?
It seems Lizzie is familiar with violence from an early age.
A number of people sent anonymous letters to the prosecutor telling him the stories of Lizzie killing cats and small birds when she was just a young girl.
There was another case in particular where the story went, she took a bunch of birds.
So darling.
Let's kill him.
What?
And chopped all their heads off. Because why? She wanted to have a funeral.
When a child tortures or kills small animals, there's something very wrong. And they're going to have problems with people as an adult.
So where were you when he returned?
And Lizzie's alibi on the day of the murders isn't stacking up.
Are you sure you were in the kitchen when your father returned?
She says she did the ironing in the morning. Helps her father to the couch on his return.
I'm fine.
Then left the house for the barn, looking for fishing equipment.
Who let your father in?
I think Maggie let him in.
And where were you when the doorbell rang?
I think I was upstairs in my room.
Then you were upstairs when your father came home.
I think I was.
That is significant. It puts Lizzie in close proximity to a dead body.
You remember, you have told me several times now that you were downstairs and not upstairs when your father came home. You have forgotten, perhaps.
Well, I don't know what I have said.
She could never keep her story straight. And it did make her look bad.
I've answered so many questions. I'm so confused. I'm telling you just as nearly as I know.
But in her defense, right after her parents were both killed, the doctors started giving her morphine. She was still getting that when it was time for the inquest.
Lizzie's testimony tightens a noose around her neck. 1 week after the murders, she is charged. Her motive? A home on the hill. And her father and stepmother were in the way. After 10 months behind bars, Lizzie goes on trial. Prosecutors spell out what they think happened at 230 2nd Street. While the maid is downstairs washing windows, Lizzie is upstairs.
Lizzie came up behind Abby and dropped that hatchet right in her back between her shoulder blades. And then one blow after another into the back of her skull. 19 blows penetrated Abby's body.
But Lizzie's defense counters.
Have you got the mail?
Yes, nothing for you.
Why wasn't Lizzie covered in blood?
There's no way that Lizzie Borden could have committed these murders and not have a shred of blood on her.
Prosecutors think they can explain.
She had to do a very quick cleanup. She had to get the blood off her hands. If she'd been wearing a dress with an apron, well, that would have prevented any of the blood from going onto her undergarments.
The prosecution argues the cover-up continues when her father comes home.
But don't worry. Where's Abby?
She received a note. She went out to help somebody who was sick.
The note never surfaced, despite the newspaper offering a $5,000 reward for the writer of the note to come forward.
Thank you, my dear.
If Lizzie made up the story about the note, then certainly it was because she did not want her father to go looking for her stepmother, who, of course, was dead upstairs in the guest bedroom.
Lizzie came up while he was sleeping. And put an axe right through the middle of his face. 11 blows. The first blow was enough to kill him. The remaining 10, that was rage.
As the prosecution paints a perfect picture of guilt, they hit a snag. Crucial evidence is not admissible.
Lizzie's testimony at the inquest almost a year before was not allowed to be entered as evidence.
I think I was downstairs in the kitchen.
And then you were not upstairs.
The jury never hears Lizzie's conflicting stories and unconvincing alibi because of the influence of morphine.
The fact that she was given morphine makes her interview with law enforcement invalid. The interview was pretty much worthless.
Her attempt to buy poison is also struck out.
I'd like to purchase 10 cents worth of prussic acid, please.
It was ruled that it couldn't be admitted because there was no prussic acid found in her parents' stomachs. The prosecution in the Lizzie Borden case couldn't get a break.
To make things worse, Lizzie refuses to testify. The courtroom is divided. Some say she did it.
Lizzie had motive. She wanted the high life, and she deeply resented her stepmother.
Others aren't convinced.
I believe there's no possible way she could have committed these murders. There's just zero evidence.
The jury must reach a verdict. After a 2-week trial, Lizzie Borden awaits her fate, along with the entire country.
The crime Lizzie was accused of gleaned as much attention and press and fervor as the O.J. Simpson trial in 1995.
Will Lizzie hang or walk free?
Not guilty. Not guilty.
It's amazing what a good lawyer can do for you.
How's it feel to be set free?
You feel like justice has been served today.
Lizzie Borden, the daughter of a wealthy family, slips through the hangman's noose.
Do you know when you'll be leaving Fall River?
She got away with murder because of poor investigative work, lack of documentation, and a lot of good luck.
While most people would leave town, Lizzie stays on in Fall River.
Emma inherited the whole estate, which was valued at $300,000, which in today's money is the equivalent of $10 million. She gave half of that inheritance to Lizzie.
Within a year, the sisters move into a mansion they name Maplecroft.
Lizzie finally got to live on the hill, which is what she wanted and what she thought she deserved. But it was at a heavy price. She was ostracized by the community forever.
People viewed her as a double murderer for the rest of her life. People hated her. People talked about her. And I'm sure people whispered about her behind her back wherever she went.
Lizzie endures the town's taunts for years. Then, in 1904, her one true ally.
It's time you started looking after yourself, Lizzie.
Her sister Emma deserts her.
Even the Reverend told me to leave.
You walk out that door and I never want to see you again.
I suspect it had something to do with the murders It's possible Emma feared that she was next.
The once inseparable sisters never speak to each other again. Alone on the hill, Lizzie's past haunts her forever.
Lizzie had escaped a prison sentence. But she found herself locked behind the walls of her home, where she was doomed to loneliness.
As the years pass, the mystery turns to folklore. Generation after generation is fascinated by the gruesome story.
The mystery of who really killed Lizzie Borden's parents has been one of the greatest questions in American folklore for over a century.
I believe she did commit those crimes. As they always say, follow the money and you'll find the perpetrator. Lizzie and Emma were the ones that benefited from these deaths, and Emma was not there. It had to be Lizzie.
There's no doubt in my mind, it was Lizzie Borden.
Because Jesus was crucified on the cross.
I find it difficult to believe that she could have masterminded such a heinous crime and pulled it off and disguised all means of evidence.
Remember, there's got to be evidence. And based on the evidence, you have to find her not guilty. Because what? There's no evidence against this woman that she committed these murders.
If she did it, she got away with it. But if she didn't do it, she suffered the tortures of the damned.
Only Lizzie knows the truth. Her secrets go with her to the grave. In 1927, at age 67, Lizzie Borden dies of natural causes. Just 9 days later, Emma passes away too. Reunited in death, the sisters are buried beside their parents in the family plot. High on the hill.
I believe Lizzie Borden killed her stepmother and father because she wanted a better life and she wanted their money. If Lizzie didn't do it, who did?
Abby Borden was probably a very kindly woman living in a house with two stepdaughters who perhaps weren't overly fond of her.
Their maid, Bridget Sullivan, witnesses the tension in the Borden household.
It's beautiful, Emma.
You think so?
Maggie, what do you think?
Yes, it looks very lovely, Emma.
She was a recent Irish immigrant. They called her by the name of the last maid they had, which was Maggie.
Maggie's a fashion expert from Dublin, don't you know?
Although Abby disapproves of the sisters' uppity behavior, she never gives up trying to win their affections.
Lizzie turned very cold towards Abby. She had been calling her mother, but now she called her Mrs. Borden.
Other accounts say they wouldn't dine at the same table. It's also reported that Lizzie said to more than one person that Abby was a loathsome, a mean old woman.
There had been a daylight robbery in the house. Someone broke into the house, apparently, and had stolen some very specific things.
My gold watch is gone.
We've been robbed. I'm going to get the police.
The thieves steal cash and Abby's favorite jewelry.
The only jewelry that was taken in a household where three adult women lived was the jewelry of the stepmother. Jewelry from Lizzie and Emma's room was not touched.
Now, have you checked all the other windows?
Everyone.
Something else puzzles the police. How did the thieves enter the home without being seen?
The cellar door is open. I found this nail in the keyhole.
Lizzie was very helpful telling them how the offenders might have gained access.
Show me.
I think her father thought she was a little too helpful. He was suspicious.
Andrew is right to worry. Something is wrong. Soon, the entire nation will know the Borden name. Andrew tries to placate Lizzie by sending her on a grand tour of Europe.
This was Rome.
She traveled with a group of women who were well-placed in society. Lizzie had a wonderful time in Europe.
Paris was my favorite.
Lizzie brags to her maternal uncle, John Morse.
It was built by Gustav Eiffel. I've been all the way to the top. The view is spectacular.
John Morse was the blood uncle to Lizzie and Emma, was her biological mother's brother.
Nothing like travel to expand your mind.
Having so much fun abroad only makes Lizzie resent her life more.
Quite exhausting, though. You must be happy to be home.
There's nothing happy about this home.
After she went to Europe, everything got worse.
She said that she regretted returning home because the home she was returning to was such an unhappy one.
Felt like
day. She no longer wanted to live the life that her father was providing her. She wanted the high life. She developed a sense of entitlement that she belonged up on the hill.